This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It is Anything Goes Friday and Anything Goes Summer. And so you're welcome to call on any topic you want. I have a couple topics that I want and I wanted to share with you very quickly. This from letters or readings from the founders, let's say. And I want to start sharing with you on a little more regular basis some of the things that the people who created this country and who were influential over the course of the last 200 years in building and improving this country had to say. This is from a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1816, 8 years after he left the White House, he left the presidency, to his old friend Colonel Charles Yancey. And Charles Yancey was, in fact, a nearby neighbor of his. And but they were talking about, you know, the whole idea of the nature of government and all this sort of thing in this letter. And he's talking about taxation and the purpose of government and all that. He says, "I am a great friend to the improvement of roads, canals, and schools. I wish I could see some provision for the former as solid as that of the latter, something better than fog. The literary fund is a solid provision, unless lost in the impending bankruptcy." The bankruptcy that he's referring to in a previous paragraphs, he had talked about how he was concerned that there was this new bank that had been created. It was the first bank of the United States. It was, by that point in time, it might have been the second bank of the United States that Andrew Jackson campaigned against. But, you know, one of these early banks. Anyhow, he said he thinks it's going to lead to bankruptcy. It did, by the way. It led to the Great Crash of, what was it, 1828, as I recall, and that was the longest and deepest depression in the history of the United States. So anyway, he says, "I'm a great friend to the improvements of roads, canals, and schools, but I wish I could see some provision for the former as solid as that of the latter, something better than fog. The literary fund is a solid provision unless lost in the impending bankruptcy. If the legislature would add to that a perpetual tax of a cent a head on the population of the state." Now, keep in mind, a penny a head back then would be, I don't know, $10 a head now, maybe something like that. Anyway, if the legislature would add to that a perpetual tax of a cent a head on the population of the state, it would set a going at once and forever maintain a system of primary or ward schools and a university where it might be taught in its highest degree every branch of science useful in our time and country. And it would rescue us from the tax of Toryism, fanaticism, and indifference to their own state, which we now send our youth to bring from those of New England." He was not a fan of New England. But Toryism, conservatism, this is, you know, he's like, here's Thomas Jefferson saying we need to tax everybody so that we can have free schools and colleges, because free schools and colleges will, quote, rescue us from the tax of Toryism and fanaticism and indifferentism to their own state, which we now send our youth to bring from those of New England. If a nation, he continues, and this is the famous quote from the letter, but I wanted to give you the whole context. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. Now, keep in mind, this is the founder that the right-wingers always love to quote, because there were times when Thomas Jefferson wrote against taxes. Here he is openly, aggressively advocating a national tax on literally every person in the country, penny ahead, to pay for schools. Because if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. The functionaries of every government have propensities to command at will the liberty and property of their constituents. There is no safe deposit for these, but with the people themselves. And nor can they be safe with them without information. Where the press is free and where every man is able to read, all is safe. Now, Jefferson had just made a fairly strong statement that was largely opposed by the Federalists of the day. They did not want free public education across the country. They were the Toryists that he refers to. So in his final, he wraps up this letter to his old friend Charles Yancey. He says, the next sentence, he says, "The frankness of this communication will, I am sure, suggest to you a discreet use of it." In other words, you know, use what I say, but don't hand it to the newspapers. Don't give it to our political enemies. He says, "I wish to avoid all collisions of opinion with all mankind." He's a decade away from dying. He's an old man now. He says, "Show it to Mr. Maury with expressions of my great esteem. It pretends to convey no more than the opinions of one of your 1,000 constituents and to claim no more attention than every other of that 1,000. So he's saying, you know, give it to the governor or the senator. I'm not sure who Mr. Maury was, but I'm assuming that he's the governor or a senator from that state. And he says, and tell him it's only my opinion. Forget the fact that I wrote the Declaration of Independence. Forget the fact that I created the University of Virginia. Forget the fact that I was president of the United States for 8 years, secretary of state, vice president. Forget all that. It pretends to convey no more than the opinions of one of your 1,000 constituents and to claim no more attention than any other of that 1,000. I ask you once more to take care of Miller and our college and to accept assurance of my esteem and respect." So I wanted to share that with you, our voice of the ancient times to begin with. And secondly, there's an amazing story about opioid use linked to the job markets, according to the Fed's boss. Actually, I'm gonna postpone that and go off on that rant a little later on in the program. Just an FYI, and a very quick one. At the bottom of the hour, Congressman Keith Ellison, Lord willing, I mean, sometimes these things get blown up because votes happen or whatever, but Congressman Keith Ellison is going to drop by with us at the very bottom of this hour, 15 minutes from now, and he will be with us for a half hour, and he will be taking your calls. So if you have calls for the co-chair of the Democratic National Committee, Congressman Keith Ellison, get in line now. This is only a couple open lines. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more right after this. And welcome back. Bill in Linwood, Washington, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today? Bill? No, Bill. Okay, let's try Carol in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hey, Carol, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. Did you get a chance to watch the confirmation of the new FBI director?
No, I saw probably a total of about 4 minutes of excerpts on a news summary on YouTube, but that's about it. Is there something I missed?
There's a few things that bothered me. I don't know if I'm being overly paranoid, but I watched about an hour and a half of it. And the first thing that really, things that just kind of sent up red flags to me was when Lindsey Graham asked him what he would advise a political party to do if some foreign agent opposed them. He hem-hawed, and Lindsey Graham had to spoon-feed him the answer. He said, "This is what you say." And I thought to myself, that's weird that he wouldn't immediately know the answer to that. And then he said, one of them asked him about Russia. Did he consider Russia to be our enemy? And he wouldn't say no. He wouldn't say yes. Mm. And they went on and rephrased it. Well, are they our adversary? Oh, yes, they're our adversary. He would not say they're our enemy. And the third thing, when somebody said, "Do you think it's a good idea that our intelligence sources and Russia's intelligence sources should combine together, as Donald Trump suggested?" And he goes, "Well, I'd kind of have to think about that. You know, that might be." And I was
might be a little problematic.
Like three things I heard him say, and I thought, "Wait a minute."
Yeah. Well,
and I wondered if anybody else noticed it.
Yeah. I didn't catch those comments. I didn't catch that. I don't know that it's, you know, exactly what it means. And this is, you know, another reason why I think that we need a, you know, an independent commission looking into all this stuff.
And I think we may. I, for some reason, after that, I don't trust this guy at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, he also, he's an interesting choice for FBI director because most of his career, he has had times in law enforcement. Most of his career was as a criminal defense attorney. And which will make him the first FBI director who's ever been on the defendant's side. It's always been people in the past who were in the FBI, who worked their way up, or who had been in law enforcement, or who were former prosecutors, typically federal prosecutors. So
he's going to be interesting to watch. But I just have this gut feeling that I don't trust him.
Yeah, I didn't watch enough of it to really have a gut feeling. I did. In the clips I saw, he was saying that he was going to be completely independent of the Trump administration, which is a challenge when you're part of the executive branch. But still, the FBI has been largely holding that position since Watergate. And I thought that was a good thing. And so I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see, Carol. I mean, we have to. You know, 2018 and 2020 can't come fast enough for me. I'm telling you, you know, to change the power structure in D.C. and in state capitals all over the country. Carol, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Harbinger with you. And Rick in Brighton, Michigan. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. A couple months ago, you recommended or at least mentioned that Donald Trump was influenced by The Art of Money Getting by P.T. Barnum.
Well, he said he was. When he was asked, I don't know, a couple of years ago, it might have even been during the campaign, what was his favorite book? Although I think it preceded the campaign. He said that that was his favorite book.
Okay. Have you read the book at all?
I have. Yeah, I bought a copy of it about 6 months ago, and I read it about 3 months ago.
Okay. Yeah, I was surprised by it. It wasn't like, P.T. Barnum being a shyster. It's pretty practical advice in there, actually.
It is. It's an excellent, it's like one of the very early self-help books. I think this thing was published like in 1870 or something. And it reads like, you know, Dale Carnegie's books, How to Win Friends and Influence People and How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. It's almost like Dale Carnegie was lifting stuff from P.T. Barnum.
Yeah, surprised. Like he's like saying, stay out of debt, don't use tobacco because it's unnatural.
Right, have integrity.
Yeah, be charitable.
Mean what you say, say what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it stuck with Donald, but, you know, or maybe all Donald read was the title.
Yeah, or maybe the tobacco. I don't think he uses tobacco. Everything else, I don't think he sort of followed in there.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a fascinating book, and it's actually some solid advice, so... I'm with you, Rick.
Yeah, I think it still pertains to today. I think anybody should read it.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I got to move along here, Rick. Thanks for the call. Philip in Maple Valley, Washington. Hey, Philip, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to ask something about with Congressman when he came on, but that's okay.
Oh, Congressman Ellison? Well, I can put you on hold, yeah. Philip, if you want to wait for him.
I can do that.
Okay, let me put you on hold. And Nate, any calls for Congressman Ellison, put a C in front of them so that I know not to put them on the air before he comes on. And we'll pick that up, at the bottom of the hour. Let's see here. Sherry in Bolingbrook, Illinois. Hey, Sherry, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. Well, I don't want to hold for Congressman Ellison, but maybe you can address this with him. I'm proud of Americans for all the calling in that they're doing and all the fighting that they're doing and the resisting. However, I would like to see those paid to represent us do a little bit more. I think I've always been a bully. I don't like to see people bullied. And right now, I think the Democratic Party is being bullied. So I would like to see a little more pushback from them. Initially, I wanted to suggest that maybe or ask a question as to why a Democrat can be appointed daily to push back after the White House press conference. Maybe you can ask co-chair Ellison if that's possible. I would like to see a little more visibility, you know, as far as fighting back from our elected officials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
We can write, we can do all of that, but they are paid to represent us. And I just think that they're being bullied. I don't believe when they go low, we go high. I believe when they go low, we need to go lower.
Yeah. You know, depending on the topic, depending on the issue, I agree with you. I think that it's really important for us to, what's the old phrase, fight fire with fire?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I want to see, you know, pick a Democrat per day or a couple of times a week. And after they give this joke of a White House press briefing, we come on and discuss, you know, well, this is what we're doing and this is what they just said that wasn't true. I would like to see a little more of that because right now I think they're just getting away with murder.
All right. Yeah, I'm with you, Sherry. Very well said. And I think I mistitled him. He's not the co-chair. He's the assistant chair. So a deputy director. Thank you. I lost my one sheet here. Deputy director of the DNC, the number two guy. But I will pass that along, or I'll try to remember. Sherry, thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. Brenda in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Brenda, what's on your mind today? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
My question is, would the Democratic Party representatives talk about this medical health care?
Mm-hmm.
If there was some way they could do it, you're a brilliant man, Tom, and I listen to you because of that, but can they talk to it to people in simple terms? In Georgia, they are shutting down rural hospitals already. The emergency room rates are going up. It's for them to understand that if you're in a car accident somewhere and there's no hospital to go to, you die.
Right.
If all these people aren't going to have insurance, they're going to go to the emergency room. You may die because you can't get in to be treated because it's so filled with people. And make things simple so they can understand it. And even the Republicans can understand that it may kill their daughter, their brother, their mother, their father, or, you know, spouse, and the fact that people who have to wait in emergency rooms, if they have strokes, if there's a medication they can get right away, it's less devastating. My husband had an aunt that sat in a waiting room for 8 hours.
Oh, my.
It
with
was
a stroke?
Too late to help her. She had a stroke. And all of these things need to be made simple to them. And you know, they use slogans. But just like a song, you know, it gets in your head and you can't get that little verse out. We need to start talking in terms that everyone sees they can be affected from this and not be so selfish. You can get tuberculosis from someone who wasn't able to get treated. You know, germs don't discriminate. Accidents don't discriminate. It doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican. If you can't get care, and then if they come out with all these crappy insurance policies, who's going to take them?
Yeah. No, I'm with you, Brenda. And the reason why you're seeing rural hospitals shutting down in Georgia, and not just Georgia, in many of the red states, is because your governor and your legislature refused to expand Medicaid under Obamacare.
I call Purdue and I call Isaacson and I tell them basically it's inhumane. I said, whatever you do in the darkness, God sees, and whatever you do to the least you do to me. And I said, it's a bag of garbage and they want to put a big pretty bow on it. It still smells. It's still garbage. And the second one, they've just thrown a few ripe tomatoes in it, but it's still with garbage and they'll eventually rot too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Thank you, Brenda. Spot on.
Day.
Thank you. Kurt in Los Angeles. Hey, Kurt, we got a minute to the break. What's up?
Actually, I'm holding for Congressman Ellison.
Okay, let me put you on hold there. Juanita in Newark, New Jersey.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Juanita.
How you doing? The guest that you have on, the congressmen and the senators, is it possible that they could put out a newsletter stating all the different bills and amendments they want to put out to correct some of these things, such as voter discrimination, because a lot of these states, especially southern states, they don't get the proper news there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have cable or XM, and maybe if if they can't do it weekly on the TV, like the guest that you just, the speaker you just had on, if they could put out a newsletter, this is what we want to do for voters' registration.
That's a great idea. I'll mention that to Congressman Ellison. You can, if you go to, for example, Mark Pocan's website, pocan.house.gov, I believe he does a newsletter. I know Bernie always did a newsletter. So a lot of members of Congress have them. You just have to go to their websites and sign up for them. They don't send them out just to citizens. But that's an excellent point, Juanita. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with Congressman Keith Ellison taking your calls right after this. You can support the Tom Hartman Program and see video of our entire three-hour show over at patreon.com/TomHartman. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Congressman Ellison, this is the problem with teasing members of Congress. They so often end up, you know, I mean, they get stuck. They've got to vote. They got to do something. So anyhow, his office let us know that he's going to be with us in 5 minutes or so or thereabouts. So the minute that we know when he's going to call in, I'll probably hit a break. And then coming out of the break, we'll have Congressman Ellison taking your calls. In the meantime, Brian in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I was thinking about how you talk about messaging all the time. And instead of talking about shipping our jobs overseas and other things that affect our employment levels in this country, let's talk about them shipping opportunity overseas and how they destroy opportunities on many levels, whether it's the Fed or, you know, raising the retirement age. There's a lot of ways they keep people unemployed intentionally.
So, for example?
How they keep it. Well, you know, if you let an employer off the hook for providing a safe work environment by shipping that opportunity overseas, you hurt people in this country.
Oh, I see. Yeah, and
the retirement age, you keep people on the job, that lessens the opportunity for people coming up.
Yeah, that's true. And Reagan raising the retirement age from 65 to 67, right now, even though he did it 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it's right now that that's taking effect, and that's making it harder for young people to get into the job market. We should have been lowering the retirement age rather than raising it. Like we did the math on this and back a couple of years ago and suggested that we should drop the retirement age to 60. It would create a boom in employment among millennials and Gen X and Y and whatnot. Number one. And number two, in terms of opportunity cost, not only when we ship jobs overseas are we losing opportunities for people, but we're shipping our technology overseas. We're shipping our inventions overseas. I mean, you know, so that they can manufacture these products overseas. And then particularly China. They take that technology, they internalize it, and they start building, you know, all kinds of high-tech stuff that we basically invented. And not only that, the money that would have been circulating in our economy is now circulating in their economy. So it's like there's an opportunity cost at the individual level. There's an opportunity cost at the corporate, at the you know, functional level. And there's an opportunity cost at the, you know, at the national level, at, you know, to the entire nation. I think, Brian, that's an excellent model and an excellent bumper sticker. And you may have to call me again and remind me of it. But I'm going to try and start promoting that. I like it. Brian, thanks a lot for the call. Bob in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Actually, in upstate New York, Tom.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to act like you're Keith. As a prior union president, as a prior executive committee member of the Democratic Party, I hope you say to Keith, I want my party back.
Yeah.
Tired of this crap.
Well, I think that's the whole point of Keith Ellison being the number two guy in the Democratic Party.
Well, and I salute he and Bernie. I mean, Bernie takes the Democratic Party to task every day, and it's a little bit shameful for, you know, his neighbors. But quite frankly, he's 100% right. It's just not the way it's supposed to go. Working people aren't represented anymore. But anyway, I wanted to talk about the healthcare thing. So many people that I'm associated with look at the problem with the Medicaid in the healthcare bill. They say, you know, it's just not going to impact me because I've got health insurance, and they don't realize that every time somebody that doesn't goes to the hospital, they get treated. When the hospital can't get the money, they roll it over into their usual and customary costs. When they send that out to the insurance company the next year, your rates go up. So all this is still just a cost shift over to the working folks who are paying for health care. It's just, again, a cost shift away from the rich, yada, yada.
Right. Yeah, don't disagree at all. Very, very well said. Bob, thanks for the call. Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence, what's on your mind today?
I'm waiting for Keith Ellison.
Oh, you are? Okay. Everybody online right now is waiting for Keith Ellison. So I am going to tell you all about the story that I started to tell you about earlier that I think is just an amazing story. We are looking. I was talking to Mike Papantonio last night on television, and it is an amazing story, and I'll convey it as best I can remember. Essentially, what he said was that one of the companies that manufactures opiates looked at the situation in a town in Mexico and found that the people most vulnerable to opiate addiction were people who had formerly been in the middle class or had a decent life. So many of them were subsistence farmers, but they were not in debt and they were not in distress, who are now in debt and in economic distress. That those are the people that are the most vulnerable to opiate addiction, to opiate prescriptions, you know, turning into not just, you know, for 2 weeks because you've injured your toe, but 10 years because, you know, now you're in chronic pain and addicted to the opiates. They took that information and looked literally across every county in the United States for what counties had the greatest population of people who used to be in the middle class and are now in the poor, are now basically the working poor. Where do you find the greatest economic distress in the United States? And then they sent into those counties detail men, which are the drug salesmen for the drug companies and the distributors, detail men who went into the doctors in those counties to push opiates on them, to encourage them to prescribe opiates, to incentivize them to prescribe opiates and their opioids. He said there's one county where 80% of the people in the county are either current or former opiate addicts or second generation opiate addicts. So this is what industry is doing in the United States to mess with us. Now, this is the article from the BBC. U.S. opioid use abuse linked to jobs market, says Fed boss. And Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen said she was not sure if it was a cause of the decline or the symptom. Well, actually, let me start at the beginning. The heroin ravaged city fights back. This is the subhead. Widespread opiate abuse is tied to a fall in the share of Americans working or looking for work, said the head of the U.S. Central Bank. That's Janet Yellen. Widespread. Now, just wrap your head around this for a minute. She's not saying that widespread opiate abuse is the result of drug companies pushing it, although, you know, that's making it available, but that's not actually the cause. She's determined that the cause is the same thing that the drug companies determined was the cause, which is financial distress, anxiety, concern, all those kind of things. Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen said she was not sure if it was the cause of the decline or a symptom revealing more longstanding economic problems. Technological changes in an aging workforce also contributed, she said. The CDC estimated that prescription drug abuse costs $78 billion annually to the United States. This is due to costs related to health care, lost productivity, and criminal activity. 91 Americans die every day from overdoses on opiates. You look at that, and then you look at the rat park studies, where the scientists said, you know, okay, these rats that will addict themselves to cocaine and heroin are doing it. They're in solitary confinement, essentially. They are in these single cages, single rat, single cage. If I was in solitary confinement, I would kill myself with heroin or cocaine, the scientists said. And frankly, I would say as well. So he said, you know, what happened if we just gave the rats a more natural environment? And he created this thing called a rat park, which is, you know, like this room size area where the rats could hang out and they could mate and they could, you know, find food and they could build nests and they could play and Just all, you know, it was a rat park. It was like fun for rats. And he offered them water, heroin water, or cocaine water. And all of a sudden, the opiate-addicted rats, I mean, even the ones who had been on heroin or cocaine more than 28 days, met the clinical definition of addiction and would go through withdrawal when they stopped taking it, even those addict rats chose the pure water once they were in the rat park. So we know from mammalian studies, from studies on mammals, you know, our family tree in the great, biological genome, we know from that distress causes these kind of problems. And Janet Yellen, again, pointing it out. Anyhow, we'll be back in a minute. I'm not sure what's holding up Keith, Congressman Ellison. He may not even make it to the program at this point. I'm starting to wonder. So anyhow, I'll be picking up some of your calls after the break. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls afterwards. And welcome back, Chris in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Chris, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up? Chris? No, Chris. Okay. Yeah, can't. And Chris is my only Free Speech TV caller who is not calling for Congressman Ellison. So, you know, maybe I can. Hey, Dan, in Tell City, Indiana, watching Free Speech TV. Dan, I will convey your question to Congressman Ellison if he comes on. In the meantime, can you and I talk?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Well, I was just calling about. I mean, I got a lot of things. I'm really big on the healthcare thing, but I'm just for Medicare for All, but I'll leave it at that. But then they always have a bad approach too. They want to start with lowering the age down to 55 or 50. I say go from day of birth to 20 and put them in the healthy people in the mix. But anyway, aside from that, my other topic was about the manufacture of guns. So, and the companies are manufacturing weapons. I mean, not just guns, but weapons, and then selling them overseas to later on, in some cases, turns out to be our enemies. And I just feel like that's on the border of treason. Mm. What do you think?
I think that our weapons sales overseas need to be seriously examined. The case in point is Yemen. Right now, the Saudis are using American-made weapons to bomb the crap out of Yemen. And you have 300,000 people in that country right now who have cholera, which will probably kill them. If you had 600,000, 500,000 to 600,000 who are on the verge of famine, they're looking like stick figures. They are dying as we speak. And that's not to mention the 3, 4, 5 million, nobody's really sure how many, refugees that have been created by this, you know, bombing by Saudi Arabia. So, you know, what's going on with that and where that's going? You know, I don't know. I'm not sure anybody else does, but it's just a terrible, terrible thing. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, and I didn't even realize that the United States, that we still had companies in the United States making cluster bombs after the UN banned them. But apparently we do. And Saudi Arabia is using them on children in Yemen. I mean, or on civilians in Yemen. And this is just, I'm sure that they're not saying, oh, let's intentionally bomb civilians. But that's, you know, it's war. That's what always happens. And it's not a good thing. It's definitely not a good thing. Okay, thank you very much for that, Dan. Philip in Maple Valley, Washington, can I convey your question to Keith if he shows up? And otherwise, we can talk for a minute?
Sure, absolutely. Hey, Tom, I've been listening for 6 years daily. Makes me probably a junior at Tom Hartman University.
Thank you.
And now I'm a PCO.
So, oh, great. Good on you.
Yeah, you've done that too. And it helps me win the water cooler wars. For Congressman Ellison, I was thinking about an idea for voter suppression and verification, but I need someone to critique it with more intellect than I have. So I wanted to leave my email with Shano or someone there so they could see it coming.
Yeah, Shano is.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's no longer here. The thing to do if you want to communicate with us is post it on our daily blog on our website, or call into the program.
Congressman Ellison or you. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
So what's the question?
Well, the question was about the voter suppression. And I don't know if it's starting to progress across the country. I'm up in the Northwest. I don't see a lot of it here, but I'm sure it's on the way.
Yeah.
So the question was basically, what else can we do?
Okay. What can we do? You got it. Philip, thank you very much for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. So far, no Congressman Ellison, so my apologies. I will not tease this again in the future. We'll just let you know when he's here. My apologies to you. Mitch, if I'm saying that right, in Burton, Washington?
Mitt.
Mick.
Yes.
M-I-C-H?
M-I-C-H, correct.
Okay, Mick, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I'd like to talk about amending an amendment that you mentioned in your book, Unequal Rights.
Unequal Protection, yeah.
Unequal Protections. It seems that we need to address the root of the problem, which is the 14th Amendment, which had in it language put there by those two railroad lawyers that said that corporations were people. They were time bombs.
Well, yeah, they said person rather than natural person. And in my book, you'll read, they actually didn't say that until after the Supreme Court ruling. They went on a tour around the country taking credit for it. But there is absolutely no evidence that they actually did that intentionally. It looks like it was just an old-fashioned screw-up. But
well,
in any case, yeah.
Yeah, just like the case that you brought up about Southern Pacific versus Santa Clara, that was an unintentional thing that happened, but yet it had a long-range ramifications.
Oh, I think those headnotes were fully intentional.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So my question is, can the 14th Amendment be amended?
It could be. Yeah, all you'd have to do is insert the word natural before the word persons, and it would change everything.
So why can't we move in that direction with the Democrats?
Interesting question. I think it's harder to amend an amendment, but maybe not.
Well, they did it with prohibition.
Yeah, what we did was we repealed an amendment with prohibition. We didn't amend it. One amendment established it, and the second amendment repealed the one that established prohibition.
And let's do the same.
Yeah. Oh, it's an idea. It's definitely an idea. Mitch, let me ponder that and get back with you on it. But I'm pretty sure I said in the book, you know, that this would be one path. I'm not sure that Congress can do that, pass a law saying that, you know, we recognize this way. Although Article 3, Section 2 should give Congress that power, but I'm not sure that they've ever exercised that power. Let me think about that, Mitch, and we'll talk about it next week. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Nick in Yorkville, Illinois, listening on 820 WCPT. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Oh, Tom, that was quick. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you for calling.
Awesome. So I recently stumbled upon and watched that YouTube video of Bernie, the 45-minute version, where he was in Kentucky this
mm-hmm.
week, and I was inspired, I think it was around minute 12, I can't remember exactly, to call my senators, Durbin and Duckworth, to get them involved in what Bernie is doing and to start and to encourage others to call their senators and congresspeople to do these rallies that Bernie's doing. It brings to light the idea and it awakens people to the truth, because they're going to these places where they have limited access to programs like yours and others that we're blessed here in Chicago with WCPT being able to actually listen to positive,
yep.
true thought.
Yep.
I've tried listening.
Nick,
to
I've got
radio
a I, Nick. I, your point is really well taken, and thank you for making it. I got a bail though, because Congressman Ellison just called in. Thank you very much. Congressman Keith Ellison, the deputy director of the DNC and representing the 5th District of Minnesota. It's great to have you with us, sir.
Hey, man. Always good to hear from you, man. How's it going today, Tom?
Good. I teased that you were coming on, and I had a bunch of people call, and here's a couple of things that they suggested. Number one, a caller suggested that the DNC start having a sign every day a specific member to do the pushback against what the Republicans are up to, press conference kind of theatrical event or whatever, number one. Number two, somebody called and asked if it's possible for the DNC to start producing a regular newsletter that summarizes everything the Democrats are up to because the news media doesn't cover it. Number three, somebody called and said, what about our sale of weapons overseas? Shouldn't we be selling something else? And Philip just called and said he's concerned about voter suppression. So those are a few things you can respond to. Also, you know, how's everything going? We got about 3 minutes here.
Doing awesome, man. And number one, I love the first two ideas. We need to put out that regular stuff. But you can punch in 43367 to learn about our resistance summer events. 43367 for that. Type in resist. I think the ideas are absolutely right. In terms of weapon sales, that's something for individual members to decide. I have agreed. I've been on bills to stop weapon sales to Saudi Arabia, which is bombing Yemen, and many other things. And I think that this is critical. In fact, I think that we should. It is shameful that we're the leading weapons seller in the world. We should be trying to make sure that we're engaging in mutually beneficial commerce, not this destructive stuff that. And often, sometimes it feels like this is what's driving these wars that we're in. Otherwise, man, I'm doing good. Let me tell you this. We defeated a Republican amendment by Trent Franks today, an amendment that was calling for a study of one particular religion to identify doctrines, to say which ones are good, which ones are bad, to identify leaders, and to study this religion and to propagate it in what would be done by the Department of Defense.
Whoa.
That religion was, guess which religion it was?
Well, probably Islam if they want to trash it, or right. Christianity if they want to promote it.
Well, it was Islam, and guess what? It was defeated. We beat
good.
It.
Good, good.
We knocked it down, and we had every Democrat and about 20 Republicans join us, because so happens, Tom, and you're a constitutional scholar, that the Constitution says that Congress shall not abridge the free exercise of religion.
Right.
And labeling and categorizing and identifying leaders in a religion might abridge the free exercise. I don't know.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
So, I mean, that was a good one, man. But the DNC-wise, we're just continuing. We're just the summer. We got a big day of action this weekend, like tomorrow. If you want to get involved, 43367. And we're trying to get and type in resist. And we're trying to get people to show up. Because we got to get these Democrats out of the campaign office and into the streets.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's going to be hot some places. Knock in the morning. Knock at night. Knock for a few hours. Bring a lot of water. But we absolutely got to engage Americans all across this country as these guys are trying to strip health care away. And if you do, and it's like me, you dream of a day when we got Medicare for all. How are we going to get it unless we get an engaged group of people out there? So that's what's happening tomorrow, Saturday, tomorrow, day of action all over the country.
Yeah, that's marvelous. And I can learn all about it by typing the word resist and texting it to 43367, right?
That is right. Absolutely, that's right. And also, we got an app called Knock10. So if you go down and download that app, it'll give you the names of people to go knock. And then you put the data in, and then when you're done, you go knock some more.
Huh, KNOCK10?
Yep, knock 10. That's right. You
knock
go 10. Up on the App Store and get it. And so that's the thing, man. You know, we are organizing. And I just really want to thank everybody who's been in a protest or demonstration fighting for health care. It is essential. We're going to beat this Senate health care bill.
There you go.
We got the people. We're going to
Congressman,
the people. Hey, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you so much, Congressman Ellison. Keith Ellison.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.